Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Monday, February 15th. And see how I'll be able to go today and hopefully get us out early. Wednesday may be the last day that we have bills. It's not a guarantee, but we also will... I want to ask for a report on Wednesday. We may do some later, so if there are some things that are cooking that you want to know about, please let me know, or Senator Starr, Mr. Stembridge, because we can always ask the Senate President to get that while we're here in session and able to listen to them. I'm going to go a little bit in reverse order. I'll start by opening a public hearing on 3676A.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3676A, it does quite a few things. In the catch line, it says eliminates the required contribution for statewide multimodal study after December 31st, 2009. You may recognize this as many of the provisions that you already dealt with in Senate Bill 1019. There are several differences, and you have the dash A4 amendment that eliminates those differences. The dash A4 replaces the measure. It's what the term used informally is a cut and stuff. It has all of the elements of House Bill 3676, but it adds the provisions that you had in 1019. It allows rural airports to receive multimodal transportation funds for transportation projects completed or underway if the project received a federal grant on or after July 1st, 2009. It restricts the definition of highway work zone to times when highway workers are actually present, and it requires photo radar enforcement of school zone speed limits to post when school is in session, if not otherwise marked with a flashing light.
Okay.
And then mention also that you do have a fiscal impact study on the dash A4. The fiscal statement has been issued, and there's no revenue impact on the dash A4.
Okay, thank you. Colleagues, we have no one signed up for the bill. Again, this will make the bill identical to the one we just passed, trying to be consistent. And my objective today is just to adopt the amendments. We have the same bill we just passed off the Senate floor 30-0 on Friday, but then to hold it till Wednesday just in case there's a oh-by-God moment of one other little thing in transportation that we just absolutely have to do, and while we still have a bill in our possession, otherwise we'll send it out. So if there's no one else to testify, I'll close public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 3676.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the amendment to House Bill 3676.
Senator Starr has moved the dash A4 amendment to House Bill 3676. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3676, and we'll bring it back for final movement on Wednesday. We'll open a public hearing now on House Bill 3677A.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3677A removes the requirement that motor vehicle service station operators, if they display a sign showing the fuel prices visible from the street, show prices for all grades of fuel. It allows a sign that shows the price of the lowest grade of fuel only. It adds requirement that service station operators display the price for all grades and types of fuel on signage that is visible from the dispensing device.
Okay. Paul Romaine, please come forward.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine, an attorney in Portland, and I represent the Oregon Petroleum Association. Thank you for bringing the bill up. Again, in keeping a non-controversial, nobody opposes bills theory here before your committee, there was no opposition to 3677. The reason it was needed simply was that under the old law dealing with posting of gas prices, the Attorney General was going into rulemaking, and the sign that would have been visible from the street would have been so big on a lot of service stations that it basically becomes unmanageable. The sign, you can't make a sign that big, depending on number of grades of fuel. When the original bill was passed, there were a couple of grades of fuel, and that was it. Now you have three different grades of gasoline. You get maybe a couple of grades of diesel. You have PUC diesel. You have all types of other things out there, and by the time you post everything, it becomes unmanageable. So the out is that you don't post at all. So you would have service stations that would basically opt to not post. We sat down with the Attorney General's office, with AAA. We had some of our members together, also with Department of Ag, and we came up with what you see before you. Basically, we were going to come up with a solution of you post your lowest grade of gas or diesel or ethanol, whatever it happens to be, or all three of those, but that's all you have to post. If you so choose to do it that way, you have to have, in effect, a reader board that's visible when the person pulls into the station from the pumps that shows you all the different prices, and cash, credit, what happens if you use a debit card, all those different things will be available to you. And again, your option is to either comply with the law as it currently stands and post everything from the street, or you can go to this reader board concept. For your comfort, basically 80% of all gasoline sold out in the real world is unleaded regular. And that's, frankly, the price that's going to be posted everywhere. It's a simple solution. Everybody that we could think of that had a potential problem with the bill agrees with it, so we would urge its passage.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Roman.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 3677? Anybody wants to testify about the price of gasoline or biofuel? Or close the public hearing and open the work session on House Bill 3677.
Where's the self-service amendment? Mr. Chair, I move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 3677 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Starr, would you carry that bill?
Sure.
Okay. Open up a closed workshop session on that bill. We'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 3674. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, this is House Bill 3674. It allows electricity generated from a facility using biomass that became operational before January 1st, 1995 to comply with Oregon's Renewable Portfolio Standard, that's known as the RPS, beginning January 1st, 2026, if the facility is located in Oregon and meets requirements for a qualified facility under the Federal Public Utility Regulation Policies of 1975. It does a few other things that are listed in the summary.
Okay. I know we have Senator Edwards wants to testify on the bill who brought this forward, and when he shows up, we'll bring him up here. He's testifying on another bill. And colleagues, you'll recognize this topic. We had this last year, end up going to Rules Committee, and there was just some issues, but I think we're going to hear those issues have been resolved, and it moved to us unanimously out of the House floor, I believe. So while we're waiting with Senator Edwards, I'll ask that Link Cannon come forward, Evo Truder from the Governor's Office, and Ann Hannes, please. Either that or I can't read their name.
He's not in here.
Okay, all right.
Evo's not here?
Mr. Trinner had a three-year-old that he was trying to track down.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name's Link Cannon, representing the Oregon Forest Industries Council, and I'm going to let the governor's office speak first, if that's okay.
Okay. Nice handoff. Welcome.
Welcome. Oh, sorry. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Evo Trummer, Energy Policy Advisor to the Governor. I'm here to speak on House Bill 3674. Maybe as a bit of a background, you might remember House Bill 2940 that came through this committee, I believe, actually, last time, through rules, pardon me, last time, which was a bill that enabled nine pre-95 biomass facilities to become eligible for the RPS. The governor ultimately vetoed the bill. Although he agreed with the desire of those facilities to be eligible for the RPS, he did not agree with the way it was done. We were able to get a lot of stakeholder groups around the table a couple of times during the fall and crafted a compromise, which is in front of you. That's the bill. It's supported by all the groups, also by Covianta, the governor's office, Senator Edwards, whose original bill it was back when he was still a House member, by the governor's office, by the utilities, Pacific Core PGE, by the Citizens Utility Board and Renewable Northwest Project. So really it's a bill that meets everyone's agreement. So we're very happy. I'd be happy to walk you through the technical details of the bill or answer any questions you might have.
Let's go through the rest of the panel. Mr. Cannon, you were saying.
Thank you. Link Cannon again from OFIC. Thank you. We appreciate I'd just like to say this is a bill that we've all agreed on. We were disappointed the governor's veto, but appreciate their efforts to pull together this working group, and we did, somewhat surprisingly to me, find a path through that everybody could live with, so we're very pleased with the outcome. In particular, I'd like to mention the efforts of Senator Chris Edwards and the Senate President in helping to craft this solution that everybody could agree with. This bill will recognize Oregon's renewable energy pioneers as renewable energy producers under the RPS, which we felt was a pretty big oversight in the first place, so this will correct that. Biomass power has a great potential in this state to create jobs, renewable energy, healthy forests, reduce fire risk, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and this bill is a great first step in the potential, achieving the potential. It will retain jobs in rural communities where these facilities exist and allow them to be competitive by allowing them to qualify as renewable energy. They get additional value for the energy they produce, and that's this will help keep those jobs in these facilities profitable, and we look forward to having further conversations in the future about biomass energy in the state, because we think there's still a lot we can do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hannis.
Ann Hannis, Association of Oregon Counties. We want to commend the efforts of the work group, and we believe that this is a reasonable compromise, and it recognizes the importance of biomass facilities. It's going to be a boost for the Marion County waste-to-energy facility, as well as help out the rural communities with their biofacilities. So for those reasons, we support this bill. Thank you, and you have my written testimony.
We do, and thank you for providing that. Questions for the panel? Senator George.
I guess it's probably to the governor's office, but I guess any of you guys can answer this. As I read this bill, just, and maybe I don't understand the technical aspects of it. So if you had a biomass plant that was built in 1990, it will qualify for the RPS, but not until 2026. What's the rationale there, just so I understand that?
It will qualify starting January 1st, 2011. The way it was done is, are you familiar with the concept of RECs, renewable energy certificates? So if you're a generating facility that qualifies for the RPS, what you do is you show that for every megawatt hour you produce, you get what is called a REC, renewable energy certificate, with REGIS. It's the tracking system that everyone in the West uses. These RECs can be sold, banked by the utilities, and that's ultimately what the utilities use every year, where they have to show a certain percentage of compliance. That's what they use to show the compliance. They actually show the certificate. Frankly, I think they never print it out or that kind of thing. It's all electronically, but they use their REC. So in the particular case of the pre-95 facilities, they will qualify on starting January 1st, 2011. They can have RECs. They can sell the RECs can be banked, but the utilities cannot use them for compliance until January 1st, 2026. That's how it's being done.
So utilities will be buying these from these firms, mm-hmm. and just put it in storage, then all of a sudden in 2026, they'll have this huge okay that we complied with the law? I mean, that's...
Well, the way, if you want to chime in, please, the way it works is it's 25% by 2025, about every year thereafter, too. So utilities will have to show a 25% renewable energy production every year after. So in 2026, every year after that, too. And at that point, they can use these RECs. The way it really will be done over the next few years, utilities will show compliance by actual generation, but also with some banked RECs. So there is a value for them to have these RECs and use them.
Ms. Cannon.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, Lynn Cannon. We, of course, in an ideal world, we would have preferred that these RECs qualify immediately. That was a lot of the problem with 2940, is there was a contention that having these RECs come into the market in the near term undermined the purpose of the RPS, which was to incentivize new energy production. So in this negotiated solution, I think it's the RPS does ratchet up over time. It starts at 10%, then it's 15% in 2015, then 25% in 2025. The reality is, with the utilities' plans the way they are now, they essentially are on a track to be compliant using bank RECs and new resources they intend to bring online in this intervening period through about 2024. So we felt that, and anybody can bank RECs, you don't have to sell them to utilities. The producers can bank them as well and hold them until there's a higher value in the marketplace and then sell them. So we felt that when everybody has to go to 25%, and since the utilities are already almost compliant to that date, that this was a fair trade-off for us to get recognized as renewable energy and start generating the RECs right away, and then they'll be available to put into the marketplace when we feel there will still be a good market for them.
One quick follow-up. So somebody creates, somebody who has one of these facilities creates a REC. How would there be a value to anybody buying them for the next 15 years? Where's the value? If I'm competing against somebody who built their plant in 1996 and I built mine in 1994, the person who has theirs from 1996, same plant and everything, they can sell theirs today, but I can't sell mine today, or there nobody would want to buy them. There'd be no market for them until 2026. Am I correct on that?
Sort of, if I can change that example a little bit. So 96 is a little misleading. The real value for RECs is the California market, but their cutoff date was 2004, so anything prior to 2004 doesn't qualify under California. By bringing vintage RECs in, what you essentially allow is other newer facilities, and that same for the utilities, is to turn around and sell RECs down to California, but use then all the vintage facilities for the compliance here.
Gotcha. Okay.
Any other questions? Senator Reverger.
Is there... Maybe the discussion has just ended, but has everybody accepted in good faith this 25% in 2025, or is that still some kind of pushback discussion?
I'm not sure if I understand your question. The 25% is, since 2007, is in statute, so there is no real pushback there. It was questionable how hard or how easy it would be for the utilities to meet that, but it looks like they're on a pretty good path to compliance by 2025.
Well, and I've heard even since 2007 that it was too fast, that they couldn't meet it, et cetera, et cetera. But that's pretty well settled, that's they look like they're on target.
Yes.
And
yes. Okay.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you. Senator Edwards has arise. Senator Edwards, if you want to come forward, and Margie Hoffman, you may as well come up. She's the last one set to testify. And join as a twosome here. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chris Edwards. I'm State Senator in Senate District 7, representing the people of West Eugene, North Eugene, and Junction City. I bring you, what's the number on this bill again?
HB 3674.
HB 3674.
It's your bill.
It is my bill, so to speak, although it's a committee bill out of the House. This originated out of House Bill 2940 last session, which, in my opinion, was a great bill, but the governor disagreed with me and decided to veto it. We had a discussion during the summer and convened a work group, and this piece of legislation is the result of those work group negotiations. And I believe, as folks before me and after me will illuminate, it's a consensus piece of legislation that's a compromise, so to speak. I believe that it does most of what I was trying to do in the first place with 2940 last session, and I urge its passage.
Okay, well, before we have any questions for the Senator, Ms. Hoffman.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman. I represent the Renewable Northwest Project, which is a trade association for wind, solar, biomass, and other renewable energy sources, and just want to testify in support of 3674 today. We have enjoyed working with the stakeholder process and the other people around the table to figure out a way that we can allow these biomass facilities to qualify under the renewable portfolio standard. It enables utilities to start investing in this renewable resource today, and it also adheres to the intent of the renewable portfolio standard as passed in 2007, which is to continue to drive new renewable energy development in the state of Oregon. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions for the Senator or Ms. Hoffman? Okay, well, I appreciate your hard work on this, Senator, and again, we talked about this extensively last year, and I do appreciate everyone working on the compromise. As was mentioned earlier, prior to your arrival, Senator, is that I think one thing we don't want to do is, you know, send the message that people who kind of had this idea before everybody else had the idea somehow get penalized in terms of the value of what they're producing in terms of renewables. And this, I think, does recognize that. The market system, as Mr. Cannon pointed out, with California and Oregon, you know, attributes value to that. But I think it also, you know, recognizes that this all contributes to, you know, where we're all trying to go. And just because someone thought of it earlier, the arbitrary date shouldn't necessarily penalize them or put them in an uncompetitive advantage with those who may be doing similar activities now. So your hard work is very much appreciated on that.
Thank you. And I would also like to add for the record my appreciation for the to all the stakeholders, both in the room and not in the room today, the governor's staff, Eva Trummer, who was up here earlier. And they really worked hard to come up with a solution, and I very much appreciate that. I think there were folks on both sides of the issue that, frankly, were skeptical that we would reach a solution before this legislative session, but we did. And so I wanted to thank all the stakeholders that came with very opposing viewpoints but came ready to work in good faith toward a solution. That's why we're here today. So.
Well, thank you, Senator. I have no one else set to testify, so I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 3674.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
There are no amendments to this bill?
No amendments.
Imagine that. They got it right the first time?
Well, we'll find out next year. Yeah. We'll find out next year.
There you go. I'm glad we can laugh. I would move House Bill 3674 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 3674 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? Order, Senator Redwood, would you please carry? Okay, so colleagues, we're done. So give you some time. Again, on Wednesday, we'll have at least a couple bills before us, including moving the transportation bill. What I've asked Mr. Stimmers to do, and those of you in the audience, some of you I may be interested, I've asked for an update on the low-carbon fuel standard. I want to know what's happened the last 6 months, and I've heard a lot of people had concerns about them being at the table, and I want to see if they're at the table and if their contributions are being valued. So on Wednesday, we're going to get an update on that, and so you can spread the word. If people want to comment on how that's going, that's the time to do it. Okay. We're adjourned.
Perfect.